Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Thank you, Dave Solomon. You know, that is truer now more than it ever was. Traditional, contemporary, global, domestic, all the stuff that falls in between the cracks is what we do. And we're so tickled that you decided to get yourself hybrid today. Oh my gosh, so many people ask me questions about what does that mean? Is it jazz that's all mixed together? It's everything that falls under that umbrella. And to tell you the truth, we're coming up on 2 years for the show, and it's over 77,000 listeners later. So apparently there is some identification factor with what is the attempt of the show and how people perceive of jazz and what they like. A lot of people love John Coltrane, but they also love some cats that are and kitties that are living today. People love Miles Davis, and they like some a little bit of R&B. I don't go too crazy on that, but everything that seems to fit under that huge umbrella of what is jazz? Trish, tell us. I'm glad you asked. Hey, it's going to be crazy today. Next hour, Veronica Nunn with a big surprise for you. Third hour of the show, Slim Man. Oh, my God. He's got a show and a half for you, and so do we in this first hour. His birthday was yesterday. He's no longer with us. God rest his soul. But his music is phenomenal. He was so inspirational, and he continues to be. The great Lee Morgan from Philadelphia. Beautiful song here. Whew. Ciora from Cornbread on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Hybrid Jazz.
Can't you see that the world is changing right before your eyes? Some people question the changes going on in their lives. They can't believe that the things we once held true were only lies. But they have no clue, no rhyme, no reason. They don't know the answers why.
Just got this CD a couple of days ago. Fathers, Children, the name of the group. The name of the CD, Love and Life Stories. I think I got one of the first copies. Yay! These cats have been doing their thing for over 30 years, based in Maryland, and I just have to make mention to thank Q, Kadir Sumler, for making sure that I knew about the CD release party, and to Ted Carpenter, who I spoke to some months ago, who told me about the group and actually sent me the CD. These guys are the core of Father's Children, and I see that they're producers as well, along with Paul Miner, who sadly passed away after the completion of this CD. So rest in peace, Paul. You did a beautiful job on keyboards and synths on this. Oh, mercy. The name of the track that you heard, The World Is Changing. How about that, huh? Very timely. And you should know, if you're in the D.C., Maryland area, that Father's Children are going to be having a CD release party, a listening party at Shea Billy on Georgia Avenue on Friday, and then a concert at The Ark on Saturday. And you can go to fatherschildren.com and learn more about this fabulous group. Man, wasn't that nice to hear that next to George Duke? I know that GD would be smiling if he heard these folks. Woo, such a charge. Had to play George today. What else is new? I play George a lot, right? All right, stop it. What goes around comes around, which you would usually hear if you went to George Duke online. Not that I've been there a lot. Deja Vu is the name of the CD, and actually Dreamweaver, the new project, is going to drop on the 16th. Now, George is busy getting ready for this and that, and one of the this and that's is the Jeffrey Osborne Celebrity Golf Tournament coming up in August. Also, I had made mention of this a couple of times, that he'll be with Al Jarreau in Lewis, Delaware on October 18th, 2 days after my birthday. It's never over until you get the last gift, right? Yeah. Now we find out, this is where I gulp very hard, because this is near to where the house is. You have to travel a little bit, but he's getting closer. George is coming to the Birchmere in Alexandria, Virginia on August the 13th. And that, I believe, falls on a Tuesday. So you best believe hours will be rearranged that day. So that's what George Duke is doing. Always busy. And now he has no hair, you know, in case you haven't seen the pictures. He's completely bald. The jury is out on how some of us feel about that. That's all right. Lee Morgan at the top of the three-song set, and mercy. I'm going to try to temper my remarks, because you talk about an artist from Philadelphia, first of all, that's near and dear. Secondly, you talk about an artist of this magnitude who lived too short a period of time. He was taken from us way before he turned even 40. 1965, that was the year for Cornbread. Lee Morgan on the evolved and ever-evolving trumpet. Ciora, the name of the track, and with him on that, bass, Larry Ridley, Herbie Hancock on piano, Billy Higgins on drums, Jackie McLean, that's how the family pronounces the last name, Jackie McLean on sax. Man, that was so nice. Lee Morgan, what can I say? One of the most revered trumpets that ever gave breath in jazz. Inspired and inspirational. Actually, he loved Clifford Brown, and Clifford Brown got a hold of him when he was a teen and gave him a few lessons. Lee's sister, Ernestine, actually gave him his first trumpet when he was 13, and he excelled very early. Worked with Dizzy Gillespie, Hank Mobley, John Coltrane, Art Blakey, and the Jazz Messengers, and on Blue Note himself, had 25 albums, a huge body of work. And he recorded from 1956, he was born in 1938, recorded from the 50s until a day before his death in February of 1972. Lee Morgan from Cornbread. Pick up anything. Anything that he has ever done. Honestly, it's going to be fabulous. Whew. Mercy. So is Veronica Nunn coming up with us at the top of next hour. Veronica is such a joy. Oh, my gosh. Had to post a little something about the show today on Facebook. So one of the blurbs in that message about the show coming on today was the fact that besides Slim Men, during the last hour of the show, yay, Veronica is going to be with us in the second hour, and the show is going to be 2 years old in early August, and by golly, isn't it something that we've had 77,000 plus listeners? And she went, oh no, now I'm really nervous. So you know that comment, put a bookmark in that, because that's going to tie into something that Veronica is doing that is so exciting, which is why she's on the show today. So hold on for that. Anat Cohen, just such a beautiful thing to be able to play a brilliant Israeli female clarinetist and saxophonist, composer, band leader. This song is so beautiful from her recent Chiaroscuro from 2012. This is The Wedding on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. This is Hybrid Jazz. That song, didn't he? Oh, my friend Michel Fambro, such a wild guy. I'm telling you what, there's a couple of things I want to say about Michel. First of all, that is his brand new song, Hello Pain, and you can find out more by going to michefambro.com, michefambro. There's such a lot to learn. He is a guitarist who's so good that he's got online video sessions where you can learn. He's a vocalist who you can clearly hear is outstanding. A songwriter, he is also, besides that, and I have told him this, he's been on the show, it's been a while, and we were just talking in the chat room about having Miche on again, okay, Mr. Fambro, Dr. Fambro. He is one of those rare creatures that, first of all, looks formidable. He's got a certain look about him, so when you see him, you go, oh, wow, because he has this star quality to him. And he's got such a personality. I mean, he is known all over Rochester, New York. Certainly knows about Baltimore because he spent time here. Knows about Philadelphia. So that's how our tie-in is. I love him to absolute death. He's just crazy. He seriously is crazy. No, I'm not kidding. He has on his website a notation about his grandfather being a vaudevillian. And the grandfather apparently used to tell his grandson, you never listen. You can't get a word in edgewise with Miche because he's got so much to say. And a lot of it is humorous. And I have to say that part of the vocalizing that he does, being a singer, he really doesn't like to be labeled. And I understand that. But to a large degree, what you'll hear from him is what you just heard. He has a tendency to croon. He's a crooner. And when was the last time that you ever heard anybody say that? So there's a lot to take into consideration when we talk about Miche Fambro. And I'm just going to say this publicly. We have to find a way for Miche to come back on this show so he can just hang out with me for the duration of the show because he's that hilarious. You can't understand what the heck he's saying half the time, but he's hilarious. I'll go on. Mary Lou Williams from 1964 from Black Christ of the Andes. Woo! Was that an LP at that time because it was about St. Martin de Porres. Mary Lou had gone through a complete spiritual catharsis, and she converted to Catholicism after pretty much a life of being worldly, although she wasn't a big sinner. She, oh my God, there's so much to say. And you know how I feel about women who were artists back in those days. Mary Lou Williams was a pianist. She started out very, very early, a composer, arranger for Duke Ellington, Benny Goodman, and more, a mentor to so many. A really fabulous friend, also a radio show host, WNEW in New York. So amazing that she would turn that song, It Ain't Necessarily So, which was sung by Sportin' Life in Porgy and Bess, make that into an instrumental diary of who she was. Phew. I just loved her so much. And here's another little aside about Mary Lou Williams. There has been, for a number of years now, a Women in Jazz Festival at the Kennedy Center in D.C. As of 2014, it's going to be just a jazz festival. There's going to be now males incorporated into the festival. And personal feelings aside, hopefully the Kennedy Center will do right by Mary Lou. They're still going to call it the Mary Lou Jazz Festival, so that's what's important. We heard too from Anat Cohen, The Wedding from Claro Scuro, and Anat has a schedule that is just insane. The North Sea Jazz Festival tomorrow, Istanbul after that, New York, Santo Domingo, the jazz festival there. Anthony Jefferson, who was our guest on Tuesday, should be apprised of that. On this particular CD with Anat is Jason Linder on piano, double bass, Joe Martin, and Daniel Friedman on drums. We are getting ready in the next 15 minutes or so to talk to the one, the only Veronica Nunn. If you are not familiar with Veronica Nunn's work, you will be as soon as you hear her. There's something very familiar about that extraordinary voice. She'll spend some time with us talking about what she's doing these days, and if you don't know that, it's going to be quite a delightful surprise. Slim Man comes your way in the third and final hour of the show, and we're going to play right now the gentleman who will thrill the Potomac Seafood and Jazz Festival on Saturday, and then in Lancaster at a really cool place, and I have to get this out in case we don't get a chance to get it out when Veronica joins us at the top of the hour. Talk to Bill Wright at Longs Park. If you go to longspark.org, you will find out about this amphitheater foundation. East Bay Soul is going to be there in Lancaster, PA on Sunday at 7:30, and guess what? It's free. And they not only have jazz acts, but other kinds of acts as well. They're going to have Eddie Palmieri and Dawes come up. Yep. And they have a Labor Day weekend arts and crafts festival that will also feature jazz artists. Now, East Bay Soul from the second EBS CD. This is Brassalicious on Hybrid Jazz. A better way to follow up Greg Adams and that Tower of Power section in the Spyrogyra song that you heard, and then with East Bay Soul, than that song right there. The amazing Veronica Nunn and Rendezvous in Rio from the Art of Michael Franks. Man, when that project dropped, everybody was talking about the fact that here was this beautiful, ethereal, fabulous, overabundantly talented woman doing the tunes of Michael Franks, and I'll bet you nobody was more thrilled than Michael Franks. Has been with him since 1993. Let me tell you what else Veronica is, who all she is. First call vocalist, writer, educator, mentor, producer now, and my Libra sister, Veronica Nunn. Welcome.
Hi, how are you, Trish?
I am much better now. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. Those build-ups put you in a situation where you think, oh, my God, how do I live up to that? You know?
Hey, no, listen, let me tell you something. You've alluded to that now twice in the past 24 hours. I have to put that to rest because you have to now, since you're in this new situation with your podcast, you mm-hmm. now have to be in a situation where you get used to those accolades because they're going to come fast and furiously.
Oh, well, let's hope so. You know, what's really interesting about doing, I had mentioned in your postings, first of all, I love your posts on Facebook. I mean, they're incredible. They cover everything, and you have such passion and conviction, and you really go toward, you know, a truth that I really, really, really respect. And
bless
so I love
you.
That. Now we've got to get you to tweeting, you know what I mean, get you into the tweet world.
Well, actually, no, Veronica, it's funny that you should mention that because I decided less than an hour ago, I thought to myself, and you must have sent that signal to me, because I thought, you know what, instead of tweeting all the stuff that's going to be happening at the beginning of the show, let's just keep tweeting during the show. So guess what? You got to me.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
Yes.
That's that synchronicity, that being in the same, you know, in the same energy patterns that always takes, that brings us there.
That's it.
That's great. That's absolutely great. Yeah, you know, I think I replied to one of your Facebook posts about I don't envy your position because it really is this new thing of doing a podcast is really challenging. The actual interviewing part is fun, and that's the easiest part. But then everything else around it, you know, editing it and then writing up the blogs around it, because I'm a real procrastinator. You know, I really wait till the very last minute before, and then I can't make up my mind. You know, Libras, we can't make up our minds. Like, well, I like this. No, I like this. No, but, you know.
Yeah, but see, here's what the thing is about you and I, you being born on October 7th and me the 16th. Here's what we do. It's not necessarily a matter of procrastination, because yes, it is true that we are indecisive, but here's what the full intention is. I know you well enough to know that you want to be as authentic as possible, so you wait for the moment to come.
Yeah.
You are a pretty organic person. You want to feel involved in the moment. You love the musicians around you because they are that way. And you yourself are that way. You want to fully feel what's happening right now.
Wow, that's actually, that hits the nail on the head. I like that. I can go with that. I believe that's true. In doing this Tales from the Jazz Side, I've learned the exercise and discipline. You know, there's willpower, which is that burst of energy, you know, that kind of gets you jump started. And then the discipline part is the thing that keeps the momentum, you know, because you can't, you know, you can't have the willpower that's constantly asserting itself. You just exhaust yourself. You wouldn't be able to stay with it. So the discipline involved in that is in doing this podcast is helping me with everything else around, you know, the working out and Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, and I've never really looked at discipline in quite the way. The podcast has actually helped me see what I was afraid of about discipline.
Ooh!
Yeah, and it's of course it all stems into my, as I had mentioned earlier, I felt I was a procrastinator, but it's only because you know, if you are disciplined, if you really are disciplined, you won't procrastinate. You won't have that fear that something has to be perfect or you're going to make a mistake or, you know, because you're so programmed to take the next step, take the next step, take the next step. And you do. And, of course, as we all know, you one step in front of the other, you eventually get to where you're going. The key is really to be focused on where you want to go. And you have to get out of your own way. And this podcast really has helped me get out of my own way.
Well, see, here's another thing about you. You probably feel overwhelmed, as I do. We are, again, sisters in this, because we don't necessarily think of just ourselves a whole lot. We are not narcissists. We are thinking about everybody else and how we can make things better for them, which is why it's taken you a little bit to get to the core of this, because you are coming from a different direction with Tales from the Jazz Side. If you really mean it when you say that you would like to address the fears of your guests, that's pretty fabulous.
Oh, well, yeah, because when you think about fear, it's a very powerful driving emotion. It's behind, like, everything that we do or don't do. And one of the things I was, as I'd mentioned before in a past show that I've done with you, I had a great opportunity to work with seasoned musicians that were able to help me. You know, help me work through certain types of fears, or you know, how do I do this and how do I do that? And I know a lot of, you know, there's all these great radio shows that people do, and their podcasts, and there's TV shows, and most of the time they get musicians on and they talk about, you know, the specifics of what they're doing. But I thought it would be really interesting to. Because I love horror, first of all. I just love that dark getting into the basement and, you know, peeling back all of the levels of things that we just run away from. I have always found that so fascinating that I don't know what that says about me, but...
No, and you and Travis have put together this beautiful theme music, too. I love it. Oh, my gosh. That is
it was so
cool.
It was just like a psychopathic type of melody. And I go, well, I want to put more, let's put some more of this in it to make it more. And then I had Mel Savelle, who is Buddy Williams' wife, the drummer Buddy Williams.
Yes.
I had her do the voiceover for it. Over on top of the music thing, because she's been doing voiceover work, and she has such a lovely lilting kind of voice. So we said, let's get into the real dark stuff. But I do think that it helps. It really does help people. I've had some response from people that have said, "Wow, you know, I was always worried about whether or not I could." You know, if I could have like the music on the stands, or so it's actually helping people. And I agree with you. I think the important thing is to tie everything in our lives toward our mission.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we don't always know what our mission is, like right from the get. Some people are really lucky when they're young to know that. But it took me a while to realize that it wasn't just playing. Jazz or singing or, you know, being a musician, that I felt my purpose was more than just that. And I really spent a couple of years trying to figure out how do I combine my activism for peace, you know, my Buddhist practice, and my love of music. How do I put all that in one place to fit in the mission? And as you say, it really, for me, it's not about being famous. It's about how do I connect to the people around me and empower them, because when I empower them, I'm empowering myself. We're so connected in that way. It's just no, you know, and when somebody else is happy, you know, your life is so much better than if you're around people who are miserable.
And actually, you know what, it's very selfish too, because when you are able to make somebody naturally high about themselves, you give yourself a gift.
Seriously, absolutely. I mean, I know a lot of people, you go into a room or you meet somebody who's just so, I mean, they're suffering so much, and you know that they're suffering because they're unable to see the whole picture. And so when you can assist them in some way of tapping into their own In Buddhism, we call it the human revolution, that you shift. It's a shift in consciousness, and so you start realizing how you're connected to everything, and that, you know, you're not like I was talking to someone the other day about, in just being like sitting in a chair. For instance, that chair, if it's a wooden chair, was made possible because a tree grew and somebody cut it down, and somebody, made it into a chair and cut it up, and, you know, and somebody painted it. And all of this is a part of how we exist. I mean, even the air we breathe from the trees, we get that in, the we get the oxygen from them, and then we give them, you know, carbon monoxide. it's a cycle. It's an important cycle. And when people start to realize that about themselves, that shift in consciousness, then there's a shift in how they see things, and so then their actions shift, and then reality changes.
Yes, I totally get that. And it, to a more people-to-people scenario here, that whole concept of facing your fear, certainly that's been talked about for a long time, but I remember... And I actually do remember Eleanor Roosevelt when I was a little girl, because I was in the world when she was in the world. And she had a great quote about being able to face fears. And then when you face them, you don't have them anymore. So when that happens, you become so free. And just you and I talking right now about that, or about anything, if there are, and there are some people in the chat room, they will take what is beneficial to them, what resonates with them, and pass that along to someone or some other people. It just becomes this whole beautiful butterfly effect.
Yeah, and you can, we can only present the tools, and it's actually up to each individual and where they are at the moment, whether they receive it, and it becomes a part of their life. But fear is definitely, it isn't not being afraid. It is acting in spite of it. So you see the thing is there, and you go, okay, this scares the hell out of me. I mean, doing the podcast thing was scary. I'd never, I don't know anything about editing. I'm learning that. I'm learning about RSS feeds. I'm learning all these things, and then I'm like, well, I don't know what I'm doing when I'm setting up all of the things, but I act in spite of it. And that's really... because fear, that somebody had once said to me that it's false evidence appearing real, and it, and all of our fears, almost all of them, are based on things that aren't true, that aren't real. It's just how we're perceiving it, and we'll categorize it based on what we're taught. I wrote in my Tales from the Jazz Side blog, but from the kind of blog today, about religion and how when I grew up, I was in that middle ground between, I went to Catholic schools because they were private schools and they were the best schools you could go to in the South. And then, but I was baptized Baptist. So, the Baptist told me I was damned because I was part, you go to those Catholic people and they worship Mary, and then the Catholic people, well, you're damned because, So I was always in constant fear of, well, what do I do? When I was 7, 8 years old, I should be playing with dolls, living, I'm worried about how do I at least get into purgatory? Because I knew that.
Veronica, you were immersed in that.
So, my goal was, I just want to get into purgatory. At least I have a chance to get into heaven,
And then they did away with purgatory or limbo. They did away with limbo or something. you poor thing. And then, we have to tell people, because here's Veronica Nunn. She comes to New York and she's offered full scholarships to Berkeley and Juilliard, but no, she pursues the theology in college because she wants more.
Right. Well, I was trying to figure out still how to get into purgatory. I was trying to figure out then how do I save my soul? And
bless
I realized
heart.
That
oh.
my soul didn't need saving. My, you know, I am where I am. I am where I need to be. I am all, you know, and that's, you know, it took a a lot. I didn't go to therapy, but I guess I should have. But a lot of meditation helped me a lot. And, you know, this, and always having a pursuit of finding a truth for you, you know, because everybody's
you know,
truths are different.
I don't know what it is that folks have used. Boy, this is, could be another show entirely. But when you use something that was never supposed to be about hate and then use it for your own gain or to manipulate people, and how many adults have done that to children, and sometimes they mean well, but
yeah.
when you don't have the serenity inside of yourself and you pass that turmoil and that chaos to a child, it's one of the worst things that you can do.
Yeah. And the interesting thing that I really believe is as souls, so to speak, you know, we're always on this evolutionary journey. And if we just allow ourselves to be open, if we allow a part of ourselves to be vulnerable, the heart part, I think we can move beyond, we can transcend the rigid rules that are in each type of religious belief. Because, I mean, I've met so many people that, you know, are of varied religious beliefs, and they demonstrate many times that they are not like the hardcore, say, Christian fundamentalists. You know, they demonstrate that the teachings and the writings, that they actually get that and that they use it in their lives. Because all of, for me, all religious documents and text is really guidelines and tools to help you be a loving person. And we're not really shown how to use the religion that we're in, as you said earlier, it's to manipulate, and it goes way, way back. It's a political thing. I mean, every, you know, it ties into politics, and that's unfortunate because, you know, we already know kind of what politics is about, right?
Well, please, that is a whole other discussion, and it didn't necessarily used to be like that, but it's certainly evident now. And then, of course, that ties into a third topic, which is, it could be fodder for another show, which is how we perceive of one another through various cultures. I mean, I don't care what anybody says, and I'll be in trouble no matter what I say anyway, because I am one of those non-fundamental Christians that gets into trouble because I'm a follower of Jesus, and I didn't see anywhere where he spoke against gay marriage. Hello. So I could get into trouble, but I don't care. When we have now an African-American president of the United States, there's nobody that's ever going to be able to say to me, oh, well, he had the same problems that anybody else had. You're a liar. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. not true.
mm-hmm.
So we have opened up this Pandora's box of all of that, Veronica, all of the religious stuff that's negative, all of the political stuff that's negative, all of the racist stuff that's negative, and you and I and people who think along the same pathway have to do everything that we can to be positive about that.
This is really so true. I mean, you gotta, it's sitting on the table. We're looking at it, we're dissecting it, and it's a gradual, slow process, because you really, you know, doing this Brooklyn for Peace work, I've been doing activism work for a little over 12 years, and I'm out there in the streets with flyers, and, you know, we're rallying. We do a lot of congressional work, and I talk to representatives, and sometimes I feel as if, you know, I'm just banging my head against a brick wall. But, you know, it really, you know, and I, this goes back to in combining the politics with the religion as a Buddhist, because I believe in many lifetimes. I believe I have been every race. I've been, you know, I'm not limited. This lifetime I happen to be an African-American woman, you know, but other lifetimes I've been other things. And so I'm not my body. I am not my body. I'm not the body that I'm in. I am more than that. And we're always isolating ourselves in thinking that we are our bodies. And so we look in the mirror, we see our bodies, we see a face. Oh, I'm a, you know, a Caucasian, I'm African American, I'm, you know, Jewish, I'm this or whatever. And then we start separating ourselves into these little categories, because that's what we're taught to do. I mean, we really are taught through education. I started reading this great book by Paulo Freire. I'm sure you've read it, called The Pedagogy of the Oppressed.
Well, not recently. You know what? It's been a long time since I've heard that title. But speak on, please.
Well, anyway, it's a really interesting book, and it was used during the apartheid period in South Africa. People would wait months and months just to get a chapter of it. But this gentleman discusses how, you know, through education, the links between education and social change, and his focus was a lot on dialogue. Most of the time when we talk to people, we just wait so that they finish so we can get our point across. We don't view someone telling us or talking about their lives where we're stepping in their shoes and really trying to understand the differences. I mean, it's okay that somebody's different. You know, the only time we have a problem is when we know it, when we resist it. You know, the resistance is the problem with anything in life. You know, we're miserable in life because we resist everything that comes up to us, you know. So,
Cat
is, you know, it's a great book, and I got, like, you know, really, really, because, you know, I love books, I love reading, and it gave me a newer insight on how do I use education as a tool to help people understand how they can be empowered. One of the things that Paulo Freire says in this book is that the oppressed must liberate himself and the oppressor. And that just blew my mind, because most of the time you're thinking about liberation as an oppressed person. You just, you know, I'm free myself, you know, because I got to be free. I'm oppressed, you know. But it's a responsibility. You take a responsibility for where you're going and what you're trying to do in this change of an existing system that's in place. And you must include the people that are oppressing you. Because most of the time, people who are oppressed, if given any situation to move out of it, they're going to become the oppressor. You see it all the time. As soon as they get the power, now they're doing the same thing, you know, that the people who were oppressing them were doing, you know. So it becomes a very class-oriented sort of thing. But that's show.
That, seriously. And this is where it gets tricky, because in essence, when you are given the directive like that, and I totally agree, you not only have to stop being oppressed, but you have to take the oppression away from the oppressor. Actually, how did the oppressor get to be that way? I believe that the oppressor got to be that way because of fears that he or she had, and that persuaded them to be in a situation where they would manipulate so they would never feel like a victim again.
Absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head. And Paul Freire says another thing, which I am still working on getting my mind around, that the oppressed have a fear of freedom because of what that really truly means.
Oh.
And I'm, you know, I'm, you know me, I've just been many of 5-mile morning walks going, what is that possibly? You know, what does he mean by that? But it is. It goes right back to the core, fear. Fear is an amazing driving emotion in everything that we do, whether we're conscious of it or not. It's amazing.
And, man, my mind is going 1,000 different directions now. Wow. Seriously, the fear, we have to really take a look at why there is fear. And this ties in really handily to a conversation that was on Facebook publicly yesterday with my friend Shannon, who's also in the music industry. We were talking about little girls and how it's important to speak to little girls. And one of the pivotal channels that Shannon was able to show yesterday, and it's on there, it's on Facebook, there is an author of a book, name escapes me right now, it doesn't make any difference, but the point does. Little girls get the brunt of this a lot, because how many, Veronica, young women do we know who are in the throes of despair because of what society says they should look like or who they should be? And this author says, she had to physically stop herself one day from saying to a little girl who was the daughter of some close friends, everything in her wanted to say, oh, don't you look so precious? Look how gorgeous you are. Oh, can I just give you a hug? You're so cute. She held herself back and she said, no, no, no. This will set the pattern for her if you tell her about how she looks. Instead, direct your conversation to what she is doing. So she said, what are you reading, honey? Oh, my gosh, could I see that book? And the little girl got so excited that the little girl asked her to read the book with her.
Oh,
so,
wow.
This is how you redirect people. Instead of fostering the notion of what they wear and how provocative of a dress at the age of 5 or 6, you get into their minds and figure out what their interests are so you can flesh out that whole human being early on.
Yes, absolutely. That's actually, you know, an interesting thing, because that's an awareness. You know, most of the time we kind of move through life and we're not paying attention because we're, oh, I got to do this in an hour. I've got to do this tomorrow, next week, and, you know, or we're focused on the past. God, I don't know why they said that to me, you know, but we're never in the moment, which allows us for, you know, exact awareness. And in exact awareness, we can monitor and see what we're saying. We can be very present when we're, you know, looking and talking to people about what we're going to say. But I never, you know, I'm trying to think now whether or not I'm never really a person that compliments a young girl about what she looks like. It's almost always, you know, what do you got there? What are you doing? You know, what do you, you know, what do you like? It's almost questioning them in finding out who they are as people.
That's awesome.
And that's an interesting point, because I never really thought about it. I know so many times we subconsciously or not even consciously will just say, oh, look how adorable. You know, you're so adorable. Look how cute.
Yeah.
Look at what dress you have on, you know. And I didn't like dresses. All right, I didn't wear any dresses growing up. So they looked at me and just went, well, you know,
let's do the best we can.
Oh, that's Miss Nunn. That's Miss Nunn's daughter. She's a little strange.
Well, of course you were, because you were being fed all of that negative stuff when you were little, determining if you were going to go to purgatory or not. Jeez.
Oh, yes. Oh, please. And I played music since I was 2. So, you know, I'm in the music world, and I'm doing the plays, and then I went to summer stock when I was in high school, and you know, I'm playing in the jazz clubs when I'm in high school, and I see this world that my classmates never saw. You know, adults drinking and being drunk and making fools of themselves. And, you know, just a whole world. I experienced worlds where, you know, there was homosexuality. And because in the theater world, it was there. But so many of my friends and classmates had never seen anything like that. So you know, your environment really can dictate you know, what you experience, but I think your perception of it, if you are open and not judgmental, can really take you in a different place. I mean, those same circumstances could have happened to anybody else who was more more closed-minded. I was very driven toward a spiritual life, but I loved the artist world, and I couldn't imagine how this world of artistry and, you know, and plays and music could be wrong in comparison to what I was taught in religion.
Yep,
and
I see that.
And my mom was wonderful because she always taught me to think for myself, to really look at it, and you decide. Just you figure out whether or not you think this is where this is. And I don't think parents do that a lot with kids. I think they dictate to them, you know, you think this way, do this way, you know.
And they don't really give their children a lot of leg room when they respond to them that way. Well, why should I think that way? Because I said so, you know?
Yes, yes.
Oh,
absolutely,
man.
Absolutely. And it's only because the parents have fear. I mean, fear
yes.
is passed on. You know, you learn to fear things. I think my mom was afraid of snakes or something like that. And then I got a boa constrictor, and I thought, you know, I like snakes. You know, what's so scary about snakes? Snakes can be scary, but it's just at the beginning that fear was being transferred to me. I'm thinking, oh, she's afraid of them. I should be afraid of them too. And that goes even into a cultural thing. You know, my grandfather is afraid of African Americans or afraid of white people or afraid of this, so I need to be too.
Oh,
and
please.
It's another.
Oh, you have just, you know what? That's two shows right there.
Right. We need to calendar these so that we.
Oh, my God. Do you know, it's so frightening when you realize the things that you heard as a child, and you can relate to this too, because you got out of Little Rock, Arkansas, and if there was
yeah.
ever a person who was supposed to leave behind what you left behind, it's you.
Mm-hmm.
This is so mind-blowing that within 2 days after moving to New York, you got a job, you got an apartment, and then
mm-hmm.
you met George Walker, who changed your world. It's like
yes.
this beautiful plan of please make sure that Veronica Nunn finds out what her calling is in New York City.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, well, you know, it, there were, you know, I had like a lot of great people that I connected to as well when I was in New York. I mean, I worked with a piano player who's a composer. He wrote Nonsense. His name is Michael Rice. And I connected
oh, yeah.
with him. And he and I did, at the time, we did cabaret-type shows. And we played in these, you know, gay cruise bars and bathhouses. And it was really fascinating because I really have had the opportunity to see all these things. And, you know, I could go into some other things, too. I can talk about what I've seen as well. And these are all choices I've made. You know, I'm not, I take responsibility for all of them. That it was just, it expanded my perception. It expanded my consciousness. And it was all so necessary because I think when a person is on a true spiritual path, they will draw to them, they will attract to them everything.
Yes.
And everything so that they are able to see the inclusiveness of it. Because you can't really truly be on a spiritual path unless you do experience all of it and know that all of it is valid. All of it, every bit of it is valid. And that's the bad and weird stuff. And boy, I'm telling you, maybe I'll one day when I'm old enough and I'm not going to be ashamed of some of the things
oh,
I've done.
Oh, man. I hope you were taking notes along the way, girl.
Well, I'm counting on forgetting. I'm kidding. forgetting a lot of it. Actually, no, I don't. You know, I told a friend of mine not too long ago, I don't regret one second of my life. Because right now, you know, sitting here talking with you on this show is incredible. And I'm loving every minute of it. And it would not have happened if everything that preceded before it happened, everything had to happen to bring me to this point. Everything, all the bad, all the good, everything. And that's the thing of law of cause and effect, is that, you know, if we always stop and look at where we are at the moment and we say, you know, am I happy right now? Am I glad that I'm right here? Then we know that everything we've done and said brought us there. And that it's not bad or anything. It's just what it is that brought us to this point. And we should. That's why being in the moment is so important, and valuing it and having gratitude for it. You know, that's a very tough thing, is to have gratitude for the moment, you know.
Oh, my gosh. And gratitude even in the midst of going through this storm, because, you know, my mom used to say all the time, if there was no rain, if there was no valley, you wouldn't be so grateful for the sunshine. And even with the rain coming down, to be able, even though you're gulping hard, and say, I'm grateful for this because, you know what, I'm learning from it, it's making me stronger, and maybe I can be in a position where I can help somebody else to get out of their valley.
Absolutely. And you always will be in that position. You know, I was a mentor of mine told me that, and I believe that we create circumstances in our lives, that you never create anything greater than yourself, because you are the highest of the creation, you know. And you know, when you get through a troubling time and you look back on it, you can always look back on it and you go, oh, wow. That was a problem. It didn't seem like, you know, it seemed like an incredible problem at the time, but, you know, you get by it. We create these things because we need them, and practice makes perfect. If I'm working on a bass line, and my fingers are hurting, and, you know, and I'm just like, I can't get it, but I keep doing it, and I'm going through all the real crappy stuff of it, eventually I will have the sound that I want. I'll be able to play the thing that I want. So, and, you know, or my problem right now is the working out. I mean, I work out every day, and you just go, oh, God, I got to get up and go walk. I got to do these curls. But, you know, after a while, you know, you look in the mirror and you go, oh, wow, you know, my stomach is not hanging down now, but I'm in the middle of my calves and my middle of my thighs and my knees now. You know what I mean? You start seeing the results of it, and that then continues to help motivate. But it's the same with challenges and obstacles. You get really good at it, and then when you see somebody going through something, you can say, you know what, six years ago, I was going through something like that, and, you know, and you can give them encouraging words. You can encourage them and support them in a real way, not just textbook.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh!
Experienced it.
Not the I'm talking to you in the room, but I'm looking at the door to see if somebody better is coming through.
Oh God! I'm telling you.
You know that, right? Oh, jeez. Oh, man. Isn't that the worst? You don't even have to be there. Somebody's going, uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know, you're knocking. Is this thing on? Hello, testing. What, is anybody there? You know, it really.
Right.
Yes, I've been there so many times, and you see it. You see it in their eyes. I think probably that's why social media is such a big thing today, because, you know, people are able to do other things, and people can't see them. You know, so they're. You know, texting or doing whatever they are, but they can also divide their attention to the TV and this and that and this, and they don't have to truly be present. And I think that's why it's so popular. You know, it's like I'm here.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's me, but I'm not here completely. You know.
Oh, Veronica, I mean, seriously, that is a very deep subject because people want the anonymity. But they don't want to let it go. I mean, one of the most horrific scenarios that is happening in the United States, at least, I don't know what it's like in Europe, but when you see two people who are supposed to be communicating at a dinner table and they're texting other people while... Oh, what?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no. You leave that at home. You put that thing away.
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, it's not being in the moment. It's as if being in the moment is too boring.
Oh, God, right. It's like you have to constantly get satisfied for that next craving. It's become obsessive.
It really is. And, you know, I love tweeting. I love reading. I mean, I'm a voyeur.
Okay, well, that's up. Part of the other conversation.
Oh, yeah, I love to read people's tweets. I love to read people's Facebooks. I really do. First of all, I love people, and I love the whole psychology and how people express themselves. You know, I'm really into that, and I love social media. I'm not against it, but I do feel that sometimes it's a substitute for getting beyond the fear of truly connecting with another person. At some point, it's nice to sit and connect with another person, and we're moving away from that because we, you know, you and I are in a generation where, I mean, I had a TV with three channels.
Exactly.
And
yes.
We had a party line telephone. That was our social media. We picked up our party line. We could hear somebody else's stuff. But other than that.
Do you know what? We had an upright Philco radio. And do you know we had a shortwave on that, too? So we could figure out conversations that were happening in South Carolina. We heard phone conversations that were in South Carolina. That was entertainment.
Yes, oh, exactly. You know, I mean, that was the thing. You just, you know, hopefully you could get in and see the tabloids. You know, they had the tabloids there. You know, a woman marries alien and has, you know, Sasquatch as a baby. You know, they had, you know, these huge things because I wanted to give. That was our first taste of the exploitive sensationalism that now is every single day. Everything is amazing and outstanding and unbelievable. It's everything is so over the top, it seems like to me. And I mean, I'm not knocking it. I, you know, because I am a traveler in this space and time, and I observe, and that's great. I don't say it's good or bad. I just find it at time as Stephen King's character in The Dark Tower, Roland says, you know, time has moved on. It moves on for us as we sit in our pockets of age, you know, in our generation. And it's okay. I try to like some of the newfangled things, and I work at staying on top of things so I don't, you know, become one of those old, you know, people walking. Oh, I remember time when, you know, I remember when we had, you know, teeth falling out of my mouth and you don't know anything, you're okay. You know, trying my best not to move into that phase. And I'm so far from it. You know, I don't think I'll ever be that, but you never know.
You won't, because you have the inner knowledge that in a given space and time, immediately, if you wish, you could change someone's demeanor from negative to positive. You realize that you have that particular kind of positivity. You have more of that than most people. So therefore, you are able to turn the switch. I know this about you. You can do that.
Well, thank you. I think it is because of the pain and suffering that I have experienced in my life and loss. And I think that everything is relative, and I think that things are in degrees to what we're capable of. I think the greater ability we have to feel pain is equal to the greatest ability we have to feel joy. And we make choices. We can make these choices and say, I can either live in this dead, you know, sorrowful, nothing can be done, this is all horrible, which I've been, been when I was younger, to being, oh, yeah, you know, and drugs don't help either, let me tell you.
Oh,
you know, you don't,
my God, no.
You know,
no.
The acid taking and all that, I mean, it just really, you know, you think, oh, man, I'm moving toward
even.
Enlightenment. No. But you do see you have the choice every day, every second. You can choose how you want to see that glass. And it's a phrase that people post and use all the time, but to really live it is to stop and say, okay, yes or no. I prefer to say yes than no. Because yes to me is all inclusive, all, you know, embracing everything. No, yeah, is resistance, and with resistance there is suffering, and there is, and excuse my French, but bull, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's just bull. Complete.
Oh my gosh, yes. And then, you know, I have to say this, because Tales from the Jazz Side is your baby, and if folks go to Veronica Nunn with two ends.com, they'll find out more, and they are actually able to hear the podcast. Here's what I'm supposed to say to you. You had alluded to this earlier in the interview, Veronica, and, you know, you may have your own fears. I'm saying this to me as well as to you, because I think that we both have this. You've had this amazing scenario through the years with Michael Franks, and that's beautiful. That's 20 years. But now this is you, and I don't ever want you to be afraid of the success, the more success that's coming to you.
Well, thank you, Trish. Thank you very much. That's that's great, and that's how I feel. I think at some point you have to let go, and you have to know that, you know, to embrace your destiny, I think is what it's called. And I think Michael has been a great mentor to me in that way, because all of the things that I'm embarking on now, writing the new album that I'm working on, which is all originals, you know, the motivation has come from Michael Franks and his writing and doing the art of Michael Franks. I thought, oh, wow, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to come out with my own original CD. And just the and being on the road with him and giving me the experience of playing, you know, in front of 70,000 people and you know what I mean, and just all these great experiences and meeting all these magnificent musicians. I mean, I have a lineup of cats, and if I wasn't so lazy, I'd probably do a podcast like every other week, but right now I still don't know that much what I'm doing, so when I get better at it, perhaps I can up the podcast. But I've met a lot of amazing musicians through just being out on tour. And I've talked to a lot of them about my podcast, and they're like, yeah, I'll do that. V, yeah, Veronica, I'll do it. You know, so it's like, oh, great, you know. So, you know, you meet people, and they come into your life, and they really assist you in embracing your destiny, you know. Sometimes it takes people longer, you know, because, as you're saying, there's fear elements involved. You know, the religious stuff about, you know, ego and blah, blah, blah. But in the long run, for me, it really is about combining all of it, putting it all together, and meeting my mission and being able to do it where, I mean, at this point in time in my life, I feel I am in the right place. And I'm
you
not running around.
Are.
Yeah, I really feel that, so.
Well, I've heard some of two of the podcasts. You've done two, and the first one with Michael, and I can even hear a difference from one to the next. And
yay!
I can,
Yes, I hear you opening up like a flower, honestly. It's
beautiful.
A beautiful thing. Yep.
Well, thank you. It gets easier and easier, as you were saying earlier. You know, the challenges, you do these things, and the more you do them, it gets easier. And, Jay, you know, and so what I think will also you'll see in these podcasts is we have our own special relationship with each person. You know, like you and I talk, and we have our own unique type of relationship. So how we dialogue and how we communicate is really, really specifically unique. You know, I mean, I really feel like each person that I interview or I'll talk with, it will be different.
Oh, definitely.
You know,
and
depending on what we've done on the road. No, I have to say.
Well, it always goes back to that, doesn't it? That's what's so exciting, because you just don't know. I mean, I heard Michael Franks with you, and he was like, he was soft because he was trying to be a comfort to you, knowing that it was your first interview. And then you were talking to Jay, and you were laughing.
Well, Jay, so, I'm going to tell you, Jay Anderson is such a funny man. I mean, I can't. We started the podcast where I had to like stop. I started giggling and laughing really hard. He is really. He has this dry sense of humor he is so funny. So it's hard for me. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he just specifically hits my funny bone in a certain way, you know. But I can't. It's so hard to like talk to Jay without just cracking up. You know, so, but that's me. I mean, maybe in somebody else, he might not strike them, you know, hit their funny bone in that way. But for me, oh, my God, I think he's so funny, you know. You have to see him, too, you know. He's got the whole physical thing, too.
When you tell Jay, I don't know what he looks like, but he's a real interesting mix. He's a warm kind of dry.
Yeah, he's a warm kind of dry. He is. I've never met anybody like Jay. I really haven't. And I think this is what with the podcast, with all the different guests that have agreed to do the show. I think being on the road with someone for a long period of time, it's a real different lifestyle.
Yes.
I'm so grateful to Travis for being, Travis, he's so, yeah, you know, whatever. You know, he's not you know, he's not on me 24 hours a day, and, you know, what are you doing? You know, he's just totally cool, because he's a musician. And me being a musician too, we have a different way in which we deal with our craft and how we go about it. So, he's not ever a problem with me being on the road or doing what I want to do. And I feel the same way about him. I want him to be happy. I want us to be happy.
Yes,
and,
that's what partners do. Yes.
That's exactly what it's about, and it's not restriction, and, you know, there's a freedom there that's real important, and usually with a musician you find that. It's hard with people who aren't musicians.
Yeah, well, when you've had a regimented life, it's difficult to chafe at the idea of someone not being like you. So that's why it's important to find like-minded individuals, because otherwise you'd be tearing your hair out all the time.
Exactly. And a person who loves freedom and a person who doesn't, you know, respect that or understand that, the two together just doesn't work.
No,
you know,
no.
It really, really doesn't work. And no matter how you might love that person all you want to, but it's just that you know, you got to let it go. You got to go, okay, let's just move on. You know, because there's not much you can do about it. But that's a whole nother show.
Oh, my God, it really is, because it's exhausting in a day-to-day to try to walk the tightrope of what you say. Not only what you do, but what you say. Oh, I shouldn't say what happened on the road the other day, even though it's perfectly innocent, but it's not perceived that way. Yes, it's another show entirely.
Absolutely. You know how it is, Trish, when we get together.
I know. It's crazy. Veronica, an hour has gone by.
Yes. Just like that.
Yeah. And I wanted to make sure I got another song in. So I'm going to play a song. And then one of these days, here's what you do. One of these days, you just come on with me and we'll just hang for the show.
Sounds great. And let's do it soon.
Okay.
Let's give ourselves, you know, let me get a few more shows under my belt. And then.
Okay. Cool.
And then let's do it. Definitely. I would love it. I would definitely love it. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, my God. My pleasure. Are you kidding? We'll talk about this for some time in August, later on in August.
That sounds wonderful.
Okay. Cool. Yay.
All right, then, darling. Okay.
Thank you, Veronica.
All right, and I'll be seeing you, so to speak, on Facebook.
And on Twitter, thank you very much.
Yes, okay, and I'm going to be retweeting you all the time. So.
Okay, don't hurt me, though.
No, I won't. I won't. I promise I won't.
Okay. Thank you, Veronica. I'll talk to you really soon.
All right, same here. Peace, okay?
You too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Veronica Nunn, and I wanted to make sure I played another song because you need to hear this absolutely gilded throat. Loving You More and More from The Art of Michael Franks.
For sure, I'll be loving you more and more.
have to say thank you to Veronica Nunn for spending such an amazing hour. Woo! It got so deep. I loved it. We are really classing up this joint today. Can I just say, not only Veronica Nunn, who you just heard, I had to play that song because loving you more and more, hun, is what I do every day to this man. I can't say enough. Now, he'll deny everything that I say, but let me just tell you how brilliant this man is if you do not know Slim Man. Multi-instrumentalist, producer, singer, businessman extraordinaire, mentor to many, and now Nashvillian, ladies and gentlemen, Slim Man.
You forgot
there you are.
That I make balloon animals as well.
Honey, you are a balloon animal. How
yes,
are
I
you,
am.
Shook?
I'm good. What's happening with you, Trish? Delish.
Well, you know what? Look, we just had a very, very intense hour talking to Veronica Nunn, so I am counting on you to do the balancing act and to inject a little humor into this hour.
She can count on me for that, honey.
I know that. I know. Hey, your continuing love affair with Nashville, Tennessee, of course, those folks know that you were from Baltimore. But what's happening in Nashpatch these days? Gotta ask.
You know, it's their love affair with me. Okay, Trish, let's get it straight, all right?
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Sorry.
I'm just here just trying to, you know, keep everybody happy. That's all. That's all
well,
I'm doing. It seems like you're doing
a good job. I mean, you're so happy there.
You know, happiness is relative.
Oh, okay.
No, it's a great town. It is a great town. You know that. You've been here. You're
twice.
Coming back, too. We're starting a meatball restaurant. Nothing but meatballs.
No. Look, the idea is supposed to be on top of a high rise, so that way we can look down, and the
on
signal
everybody.
Will be real great. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I'm really excited because this is different for you. The reason why you're with me this hour is because there's a big show, but it's different than usual at Ram's Head in Annapolis, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is very, it's going to be very different.
Tell us why, Slim Man.
Because I'll be wearing my fur chaps with no drawers and no pants and a fringe vest with no shirt.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, please, please don't leave me with that visual.
Yeah, that's what I'm wearing, honey. It's going to be a different show.
Man.
I'm busting out the cowboy outfit. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's really terrifying. And does David Bach know that, by the way?
No, I just kept it as a surprise for just you and your listeners.
Oh, boy. All right. I'm not sure how to respond to that because I'm going to dream about that tonight. And
No, you're not.
I'll come and get you.
No, you're not. It's going to be a great show. You know, I love playing with the guys that I'm playing with. George Hazelrigg on piano and Johnny Cole on drums and Kevin Levi on the sax and Hitman Howie Z on the bongos. David Bach is going to be on the bill with us. He's going on first. He's great. He's talented.
He is.
And he's a great piano player. He's got nice hair, which is the most important thing. And he's a sweetheart of a guy, and, you know, David and I go back, you know, in the Wayback Machine, and, yeah, it's going to be a cool show. I'm gonna do something a little different right in the middle. I'm going to do my Irish clog dancing routine, which is, nobody's ever seen that before, so it's going to be exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, and that will have him coming back for more, I guarantee.
Yeah, well... Now, I've got a special little surprise coming up in the middle of the show. So, yeah. I'm going to be coming out there. I'm going to be playing an instrument that I've rarely played ever before in public. and it's not the bagpipes, but it's going to be a nice little surprise. And one of the cool things is that, you know, I think I know everything, but I don't. And so I thought, you know, I was going to put together the set list and, you know, kind of come up with the songs that I thought people might want to hear and stuff. So I decided to send out a massive email blast to my 5 or 6 loyal fans and ask them which, you know, what their favorite Slim songs were. And I was really surprised by the response, because nobody ever responds to my emails. But this was nice, you know. It was really kind of cool that, you know, people like, hey, this is my favorite song. These are my favorite 5. These are my favorite 10. One guy from Dusseldorf, Germany, listed every song I've ever done and said these are my favorites. It was 115 songs.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah, because these are my favorites. They listed every song I've ever done. I was like, wow.
Boy, man, that's a small town in Germany right there.
Yeah. It's a great town if you've never been.
Anyway,
so I got the, you know, people responded. It was so cool. It really was. And so I decided to take the top 10 songs and do those songs in the set. So,
oh, neat.
I let everybody kind of choose the set list. I'm going to have a couple of surprises in the middle, like I said, so, you know, I don't want to keep it so obvious. But, and then I took it a step further because, you know, I have attention surplus syndrome, which is AFS, which is the exact opposite of ADD. I think about things for way too long. So I was, you know, my ASS was kicking in, and I was started thinking things through, and I thought, you know what? Wouldn't it be really cool to take the top 10 songs that people voted on and make a CD and just have it available just for that night? And then as my ASS kicked into ultra high gear, I thought, well, you know, I can fit more than 10 songs on a CD. So I took the top, I could only fit 16 songs on it, but I took the top 16 songs and I just took them to a manufacturer yesterday.
Did you?
And I'm going to burn like the top, I'm calling it the Slim Man Sweet 16.
Oh, and I so love that.
I took the top 16 songs because I couldn't fit 17. I could only fit 16. So I took the top 16 songs, and I made a CD out of it, and I'm going to bring copies to all the original recordings. I went back and found every single original recording for all the songs that people voted on. I took the top 16 songs from all the votes that people cast, and I burned a CD just for the Ramstead Tavern on Saturday, July the 20th, in Annapolis, Maryland.
And let me tell folks, for Ramstead to have you on a Saturday, because they only reserve their best and most popular for the weekend. So for you to have a gig on a Saturday night, they love you. They love you.
Yeah, being that I'm so unpopular and not their favorite, it is a miracle.
No.
But,
no.
Yeah, I mean, Saturday night, you know, I love Annapolis. I mean, I'm not joking. It's one of my, it might be my favorite town in all of Maryland. I just love it there. I love the vibe. I love the colonial thing that's going on there. I love it that it's right there. And you can walk down to the water and the Naval Academy, and it's the birthplace of my mom, and got so many great memories there. And I just love that town. I have always loved that town. It's just a great hang, great restaurants, great shops, great, you know, last time I was there, you know, I played at the Ram's Head, and I stayed for a couple of days, and you know, I took a little boat ride and drank Bloody Marys. Yeah, man, it's just a cool hang. It's just a cool hang.
And here's the beautiful part about going to Ramshead. Man, they should be paying me money for saying this. But here's what I love about going to Annapolis to that venue. And if folks who are listening live or in the archives understand this, it means everything. When you come into the area where Ramshead is, there is a parking garage just around the corner, a sweet little walking distance. And if you time it right, it's just $5. And there's a special little walkway for you to go down the alley and get to Ram's Head. It's so fabulous. You've got parking that's protected, and you're going to get good food because they've got really good food there.
They do.
Yep.
You know, I love it. You're right. I mean, you know, that parking garage is such a great, well-kept little secret. It is covered, and it's cheap, and if you walk through the garage, I mean, you're less than a half a block away from the Ram's Head. And, you know, the Ram's Head is a cool spot. I mean, I love the fact that they have a baby grand piano on stage, which, you know, George loves the playing piano. And, you know, I'm a big real instrument fan. I love acoustic pianos. I love real drums. I love all the real stuff, you know. And to have a grand piano on stage is just such a treat. And Ram's Head has a incredible sound system. We've got great sight lines. It's not a bad seat in the house. I really enjoy playing there. And, you know, we've got, there's a friend of mine. His name is Higgy. He used to do lights for my band Boot Camp way back in 1942. And I've got him, and this is going to sound crazy, he does lights for Kenny G.
Oh, wow.
I know a lot of people, you know, how they feel about Kenny G, but
I love Kenny G. I don't care what they say.
Okay, well, he does lights for Kenny G, and, I follow him on Facebook, and you should see, like, the lighting that, I mean, it's quite a show when Kenny G goes out on this. And so I've got him coming in to do lights, so we're going to look really good, which is way more important than sounding good. So,
no, listen, I have seen you at Ram's Head, and you, you know, I know how you get, because you get a little embarrassed when I say this stuff about you, but you literally transform on stage. You become this vulnerable, sensitive, beautiful, charismatic soul, and women are weeping into their alcoholic beverages by the time the night is over. Seriously.
You have to stop drinking during the day, Trish. You just got to wait until the evening before you start having that sauce. I know today you've probably been started off with the Bloody Marys and stuff, but
you do. You're one of my favorite people to see in person, and that's saying something.
Well, thank you very much for that. I mean, I know that, you know, the alcohol's probably kicked in. You're probably taking it up a little much.
See, I know you can't let it rest. You can't. I understand.
Yeah.
But that is the truth.
Thank you for those kind words.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Welcome. It's gonna, you know, and the cool thing about it, I mean, the thing that really kind of, I mean, I was, you know, it was so strange when I kind of got this thought in my head, like, why don't you just, like, ask people what songs they want to hear. Because I was thinking, you know, I got a show in San Antonio in August, and I'm going out to California in August, and, you know, I got some other things going on. I'm thinking, why not let, you know, just ask folks, what are their favorite songs? And there were some, you know, there were some surprises. I mean, songs that I was like, what? Like, one of the top vote getters was a song called Night Like This, which is, I mean, it's never you know, it's never gotten a whole lot of airplay. It's never, you know, been, I mean, it was kind of something that took me by surprise that that was one of the bigger songs. And there was also a song called Angela, which, you know, never received a whole lot of, you know what I mean? A whole lot of airplay or recognition.
around Baltimore, that song is big. If you remember, because you remember Lori Lewis at WSMJ, of course you do.
Uh-huh.
And you remember that one of our coworkers was named Angela.
Uh-huh.
She is beautiful. And she heard that song and she cried.
Wow.
Because
that, huh?
the song is so powerful. And then she saw you and she went, oh, my God, he's so handsome. And I know that you met her, but that song is really big in Baltimore, honestly.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know at least 5 or 6 people voted for that song in Baltimore, so I guess it must be here.
Well, you know what? I picked out 3 of my favorites. And I know that we're probably going to not get to all 3 during this hour.
My favorites are just your all-time favorites. Like, was it like YMCA by Village People?
No,
MC,
no, no.
Macarena. And Gangnam Style.
Oh, my God, no. These are 3 favorite Slim songs. And,
oh, Slim songs. Oh, okay,
yes.
Go ahead.
So, you know that I love, you have this song twice. On 1,000 Miles Away and on your live album For Now and Forever. I love that.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and,
that was one of them. I mean,
oh,
I
yeah.
I don't keep the rest of them surprises, but that was one of the songs that got a lot
okay.
of votes, and I was kind of surprised.
And one of them is a no-brainer because it's Valentine's Day. Come on.
I didn't get any votes.
Oh, you lie like a rug.
No,
it did too.
I swear to God, I'm here on my computer. I'll look up the list because you know, I mean, there are a whole lot of songs. Anyway, that got no votes.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Oh my
Thanks
God,
a lot, Trish, knocking me down a couple of notches there, honey.
Well,
hey, let me
all
get
right.
a little Slimbo, a little ding zinger. Let me see. Let me look at Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day got 1 vote.
That is insane. I thought that was going to be at the top of the list. Oh, my gosh.
And there were a lot of votes. I mean, there were a lot of votes. I got 1. Thanks, Trish, bringing me down.
I'm sorry. Well, look, I have one that I need to play.
Well, we won't be playing that one. But what else?
No.
What
All
else?
Right.
Come on. You're not going to say the other one now because you're afraid.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am because I want to play it. I want to play it. Because you wrote this song. And,
yeah, I wrote them all.
Well, all right. But this particular song is a Christmas song.
Which one?
It's Christmas Eve.
It got no votes.
Oh, well, I don't care what they said. These are just some of my favorite Slim songs. I'm very happy that
Thanks
you got a whole
so
lot of responses.
Much, Trish. You're bringing me down.
No, just, look, people have different kinds of opinions.
My version of Blue Christmas by Elvis Presley got a bunch of votes, but Christmas Eve, not 1. Thanks, Trish. Valentine's
yeah.
Day got 1. Thanks, Trish.
Let me tell you something. I know the people that are your fans, and a lot of those people are writing to you telling you what they think you want to hear.
No, they aren't. No, they're not.
Are
I'm
you sure?
Because a lot of, yeah, I'm sure. Because a lot of, I mean, I didn't, you know, a lot of these songs, I mean, a lot of them took me by surprise. Believe me, I don't write a song and just kind of put it out there kind of like going, oh, I hope people like this. I write stuff that I, you know, really enjoy. And I mean, a lot of times I'll, you know, if I'm, you know, I release a CD and I don't like the way a song sounds or, you know, I'll go back in the studio and re-record it and re-release the CD. I just want, you know, things to be, I mean, I like these. I like this. I mean, I do. I enjoy this stuff that I write. So,
oh, of course
people,
you do.
I don't think, yeah, but I don't think that people are just sitting there trying to go, oh, I wonder if Slim, because I, you know, for instance, I thought 1,000 Miles Away, which is one of my favorite Slim Man songs, would have gotten a lot more votes, but it didn't.
That's
it
interesting.
Didn't. And then, yeah, and then a song like There For You, which was, you know, I mean, you know, it got a ton of votes, and that took me by surprise. Red Moon Rising got a lot of votes, and it took me by surprise. Beginning, which, you know, which is the beginning of the Lin Manuel Jazzified CD, got a ton of votes, and I mean, there's a lot of these songs kind of just took me by surprise, but it was a wonderful response, and it was so cool first of all, it's so cool that people actually responded, and a lot of them did.
I didn't
expect that, and a lot of people responded, and that was cool. And the other thing was that there was a lot of surprises, a lot of songs that I didn't think that people would even kind of remember, let alone vote for, that got a lot of votes.
Well, you know what? You have been the subject for a conversation through the past several years. You have, just because of the fact that on different albums that you would have, sometimes, and we really have talked about this, there is a certain kind of letting your hair down that you do, and you can hear like maybe a break in your voice, or you can hear a particular
mm-hmm.
emotion come up. So when
mm-hmm.
you say, for example, "There for You," that is no surprise that people really have voted for that song, because that's one of those songs where you really put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And people can feel the love, you know, when Slim Man has fallen in love, when Slim Man has fallen out of love, when there's pain involved, when there's joy involved, we can feel it. So,
yeah, well, I mean, it was just kind of nice. I mean, first, like I said, to get that kind of response is just amazing. And so many songs that got a lot of votes were just took me by surprise. And it's also going to be kind of cool because, you know, I'm going to play some songs that I haven't played, you know, out live, which is going to be really neat. And
that's wonderful. That's a great idea.
Yeah,
Sweet 16, too.
Yes, the Sweet 16. And plus, I'm going to, you know, like I said, it's at the top 16 and put them on a CD, and I want to just have it just for the Rams head. So. And that's going to be kind of cool. So, you know, it's going to be a nice little show. And plus, I've been working on a little surprise, a little 5-10 minute surprise in the middle of the show.
Yeah,
which is going to be kind of cool.
You have said that, so now I'm really curious.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I'm
going to
bring out the banjo.
No, you're not.
I'm bringing out the banjo, and I'm going to play some Slim Pickens.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Slim Pickens.
You know, this show is not going to turn into Hee Haw, is it?
You might. I might bring Minnie Pearl out.
Well, if you can do that, you've really done something, because she's been gone for a little while. Bless your heart. Her heart. Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, Slim! Oh my God, you are something else. Well, look, I'm not batting 1,000 here, but can we play one of the favorite songs?
Yeah. One of your favorites, or people actually picked? Which song do you want to play?
For Now and Forever. I mean, it's a longer song.
You're gonna play the live version?
Well, yeah.
That's cool. That's great. Yeah, well, you know, I'll just give a little background on the song. A year and a half ago, this sound guy out in California who's, you know, he does Yes and he does Toto. He's this really incredible sound guy. He sent me a stack of CDs. He's like, you know, I've been recording you for the longest time. And what happened was that there were like 25 CDs that he sent of like shows that I've done since 95, 96. And one of the songs that really stuck out was a song that he recorded of mine called For Now and Forever. It was done at a teeny little club called Jacob's. No exaggeration, there couldn't have held more than 30 people. It was in this little strip mall in California, a cool little place. And, he had recorded the song For Now and Forever. And as a matter of fact, it's this guy, Paul Doty, and his wife, Leslie. And his wife, Leslie, had sent a note up to the stage. Can you send this song out to Paul for our anniversary? Because they both have the sound company. And so I did this little speech. You know, this is from Leslie to Paul. They've been out, you know, coming out here for years and years and doing the sound. And, you know, God bless them. And thank you so very much. And then we went out and did the song. And he recorded it and sent me a copy of it. And it was just, I just thought, wow, that's really cool. So I put it on the 1,000 Miles Away CD as a teaser for the upcoming Slim Man Live CD. Of course, I had no idea if I was going to release the live CD at the time. But after listening to the rest of the recordings, I did release a live CD. So it's on 1,000 Miles Away as a teaser. And it's on Slim Man Live, which is the latest Slim Man CD for now and forever. That's the backstory.
Well, and there's an addendum to it, which is this is the ultimate wedding song right here. The ultimate wedding song.
Yeah.
Shoot.
Yeah.
All right, Slim Man, for now and forever. It's so good that it's on twice on different projects. Right here on Hybrid Jazz.
For the rest of our days.
crowd goes crazy, ladies and gentlemen. Woo! That's what they're going to do at Ram's Head on the 20th.
That's because I bought everybody in the place a drink. That's why they were going crazy.
Whatever the circumstances, that song is going to make people weep when they hear it if they haven't heard it. But,
yeah, but it's actually,
you know,
but it's a joyful song, really, when you think about it. I mean, it sounds kind
of
sad. But
no.
Maybe tears of joy. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Oh,
of
course.
That is such a love song and a half, because you are saying you have found the ultimate, the person. This is it. And, man, that's emotional stuff for some people to grasp, especially if they're on their third beer.
Yes, it is.
So, look, here's some potential trouble looming ahead at Ram's Head on the 20th, because you've got to be very sure who you're coming with. If you have a date, make sure you're serious about this date. This cannot be a casual situation.
I'm not bringing a date.
No, not you. Not you. But folks who are going to be listening to what you have to sing in the way of these songs.
Oh, I gotcha.
Because invariably,
there will be a woman
turning to a man at some point in the night saying, "Why can't you feel that way about me?"
Yeah.
With a nudge in the ribs.
Is that the way you feel about me?
Yeah.
How come you haven't proposed yet, Larry?
Exactly.
Really?
You don't want to be coming with just anybody.
All right, we got to hire Slim Man for our wedding. When is our wedding, Larry?
Yes. Yes.
I gotcha. I'm hearing you, Trish.
Uh-huh.
I'm not thinking like a woman. That's my problem. I don't think like a woman.
No.
I try to.
You actually are quite sensitive on stage. So it's like all of the good feminine qualities of a man come out when you perform on stage.
Especially when I dress like a woman, they come out even a little more.
Please don't do that in Annapolis. Don't. We've seen you, and it's not pretty. So look, let me ask you a question. How is Batu?
You know, right now, he's freaking the fuck out because here in Nashville, we get these really violent thunderstorms and these cracks of lightning and thunder, and it freaks him out. Batu is my dog. He's a bull terrier. He looks like, you know, Spuds McKenzie. And right now, he's like leaping into my arms because he's just freaked out because there's this crazy, I mean, crazy thunderstorm rolling through here. And it's been, you know, I've never witnessed stuff like this. Can you hear it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's like right over top of us. And it's raining like you've never seen it rain before. It's just amazing that here in Nashville, these thunderstorms roll through here. And I've never seen it rain like this anywhere else. I mean, it's just been, it's crazy. All of a sudden, it was like beautiful. I mean, beautiful and calm. And, you know, I was going to look at a place to possibly start the restaurant. And it was calm, 80s, sunny, beautiful. And here it is, like an hour later, and it looks like the end of the world. And Batu, my little dog, 70 pounds. But he's he's freaking out. Yeah, the thunder really freaks him out. It's just, he doesn't know what's going on, but I try to tell him everything's all right. Boo-boo, everything's going to be okay. He's like, look at me. Help me.
Well,
he's doing okay, all things considered, but thunderstorms freak him out, and we've been having
a lot of to the vet, and that's why I'm asking you, because...
Yeah, he was just having some, you know, he was having some skin problems, that's all.
Oh, okay.
You know, he's a very sensitive guy, so he's just...
I know he is.
But he's doing all right, thank you for asking.
Of course, and look, what? I've got Rufus and Chaka Khan, my cats, here. So if you want me to, I'll put them on the phone and we'll talk them, you know, out of this.
Yeah.
We'll talk
them out of it. All right.
Yeah.
Rufus and Chaka Khan. That's funny. Did I ever tell you the story about Chaka Khan?
No.
Of Rufus?
Uh-uh.
I was one of the crazy jobs I had early in my life was I used to do sound-alike records. They would put out these records that were not the original stars, and you would have to try and sound like these, you know, sound like these people. So what I would do, I'd go into the studio. I was in Studio B out in Timonium, Maryland, at a place called Blue Seas. Little Feet was in Studio A doing Feats Don't Fail Me Now.
Oh!
And I was in Studio B. Did I tell you this story?
No!
I was in Studio B doing sound-alikes, and I was doing Rock the Boat, you know, Rock the Boat, don't rock the boat, baby, rock the boat, don't tip the boat over. I was
doing
that
song.
And my mom had just come home with the very first Rufus featuring Chaka Khan album with Tell Me Something Good.
Oh, my.
Well, I was early for my session because, you know, I love going in the studio. Now I get there early all the time. So I was early getting the session, and I was, you know, I had this record, and I figured, well, I'll put it on, and I'll listen to it for an hour while, because I'm here way early for my session. And I was sitting in Studio B, and who walks in as I'm dropping the needle on the very first cut? It was Bonnie Raitt, who was singing backups for Little Feet that day in the studio, and she was there early as well. And so we sat there, the two of us, and listened to the very first Rufus featuring Chaka Khan album. And
oh, my.
It was just, it was really cool. I mean, we hardly even talked. I mean, we just sat there and listened for, you know, whatever it was, 40, 45 minutes.
Oh,
and I was like, hey,
God,
that's great. I'm like, whoa.
That
Rufus
is so
featuring
awesome.
Chaka Khan, and those are the names of your two kitty cats.
Yes, and they're brother and sister cats. And one is black, and he's got white touches with a green and a blue eye. And
wow.
Chaka is white with chocolate and black on either ear. They're the most gorgeous cats in the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like it.
Yeah.
Well, there was
and,
a song on that very first Rufus featuring Chaka Khan album called Tell Me Something Good.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a Stevie Wonder song. And later on, a couple of years later, I got signed to Motown as a songwriter. And the guy that signed me, Carl Griffin, was the guy who found that song and placed it with Rufus featuring Chaka Khan on that first album. He was going through all the old Stevie Wonder stuff and found that tune, Tell Me Something Good, and he placed it on that first album. And I didn't know it at the time, of course, because I had not met him yet, but a couple of years later. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Man,
so,
that's
yeah,
a small
that's
world.
Story of, yeah, Rufus featuring Chaka Khan.
Oh, my gosh. And Bonnie Raitt just happened to be there with Little Feet that day, and you sat down to listen to Chaka Khan. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, she walked in. She's like, who's this? I'm like, I don't know, new singer. She goes, wow, that girl can really sing. I'm like, yeah, sounds great.
How about it? Yeah. Hey, look, it's really a small world. You know, Tracy Hamlin from Baltimore, she tours with Gloria Gaynor. And Gloria Gaynor is friends with Chaka Khan and Sister Sledge. And they all had their picture taken. Honest to gosh, Slim, there's going to be some sort of concert one of these days with all of this Baltimore talent combined, jazz, R&B, rock, pop. Man, if that came to pass, it would be unbelievable.
Yeah, there are a lot of great musicians and singers and writers and creative people in Baltimore.
Yep. Yep. And now you've got,
there.
I mean, it's more evident in Nashville where you are now because this is what they do for a living. But in Baltimore,
yeah,
it's just so frustrating because they have to have their day jobs and then they play at night or on the weekends. But man, you know, you being in the throes of all that's happening, what do you think is like top of mind happening that's exciting, that's maybe a little bit of a secret now, but it's not going to be a secret for too much longer in Nashville?
You know, there people are using this town as a springboard, so there aren't too many people from Nashville who are making it. People come here to make it.
Yeah.
And one of the best bands I've seen has been a band, I think I told you about it, St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
Yeah.
They're you know, kids, you know, late teens, early 20s. They're a horn band. They sound like they, you know, the guy looks like Drew Carey's son. He's got the bow ties and he's kind of heavyweight with the big, you know, glasses with the, you know, black rims and stuff. And he's got a voice like, I don't know, like Wilson Picker or something. And they're young kids that do this old 60s style, all original soul music.
Really?
And it's all original, but it sounds like it was, you know, recorded off an old Otis Redding or Wilson Pickett CD. And it's really good stuff. And it's about trumpet, trombone, bass, guitar, and drums, and then a singer. It's a six-piece band, but then there's no keyboard. I mean, it's just kind of stripped down, but it's really good.
Oh my gosh!
And they're catching a lot of buzz here. I saw them. You know, I think I told you a couple of months ago, and then like, you know, 3 weeks later, they were open up for John Mayer, and now they've got the big management company, and a lot of people are, you know, NPR calling the band to watch. But that was one of the bands that I saw here that was, you know, definitely on the upswing. And there are some other great, you know, great bands around town that you see that are, you know, that are going to make an impact. There's a band called DeRobert, DeRobert, and the Half Truths. And they're, yeah, it's a good name, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, they're all like a, once again, young kids who are doing like 70s style funk horn stuff. Not quite like Earth, Wind & Fire. Earth, Wind & Fire was so intricate in their, you know, writing and arrangement. This is more like, you know, James Brown-y, Ohio Players kind of P-funk, kind of just grooving, funky 70s horn.
Down and dirty.
Stuff.
Down and dirty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good, and I've seen them a couple of times, and, you know, there's a lot of great stuff going on here. But, you know, when you think what you were saying about, you know, a lot of great musicians in Baltimore, but they got to have day jobs, almost everyone that I know, you know, most of the people that I know in Nashville are, you know, doing something else other than music.
Are they? Okay.
I mean, especially in this town, because there are so many musicians. I mean, you can't go out there and make any money because, you know, there are 500 people waiting in line to do it for free.
That's the point. Yeah.
But that being said, I mean, you know, I know a lot of guys who are doing really well. You know, Angelo Petralia, he's the guy that produces and kind of discovered and gave Kings of Leon their signature sound. He's doing really well. And he's got a band called the Jane Shermans, which is like a, I don't know, they're like the Pretenders meets Missing Persons meets U2. It's got this, you know, gal
wow.
singer who plays bass. Really, really good. They're one of my favorite bands. I've seen them like three times, and I love them. And the guitar player, Angelo, is the guy that produces Kings of Leon, and he's doing real well. I mean, he doesn't have to work during the day, but... And there are a couple other guys that I know that are good friends of mine. You know, Robert Ellis Arl. He's a songwriter that did a lot of Taylor Swift stuff in the beginning, and he's doing really well. And he started his own little record company about 10 years ago, and he and his sons, Jeff the Brotherhood, and they have gone on to just explode their own Warner Brothers now. And you know, I saw him on Leno and Letterman, and that's one of my favorite bands that are actually from Nashville, Jeff the Brotherhood. They're going to be huge. They're a rock band.
Mm.
It's drums and guitar. and the guy plays a three-string guitar. You talk about minimal. And these guys have a sound. Their latest album is called Hypnotic Nights. And I don't know, I love it. I do. I mean, I like all kinds of music, and this is like one of those like rock albums that it's been my favorite for the last year. And they're not doing any day jobs, but they're a great band. They're actually from Nashville, and different. They're different, and they're good. And the rest of the world's like picking up on it and catching on. It's really kind of cool.
Yeah, and I wish people would understand that instead of trying to make clones of what is successful. The reason why people get to be successful is because of the authenticity,
Yeah, Trish, that's a great point. There was this guy that brought me this gal singer. She's young, she's gorgeous, and she sounds like everybody else. And I was like, she's great. She's got a great voice. She's got a great vibe. But why are you going straight down the middle with this thing? It's just you've got a million people doing this. It's like there's nothing that's going to make anybody stand up, and go, hey man, we got to have this. Give me something different. I had a conversation with the guy yesterday. I was like, why don't you do something different with her? Like, do some kind of bluesy, country, rockin', stuff that nobody else is doing.
And this is a point to latch on to just that, because I just had a thought. T is really excited because one of the shows he really wanted to see this summer was a show that's coming to Meriwether Post. And it's Bob Dylan, it's Wilco, and My Morning Jacket.
Uh-huh.
So, I'm thinking of all three of those acts. Now, seriously, through the years, and Wilco and Bob Dylan, you can certainly see this, but how many clones have people tried to make of Bob and Wilco and even My Morning Jacket since they've come out? And you shoot yourself in the foot. Because when they all came out, people were going, wow, it's this breath of fresh air. And meanwhile, you want to make the air stale by doing 19 gazillion of the same thing.
Yeah, well, I think that's the culture we live in. And I think it's not only in music, I think it's in television. Once you see like one crime scene, television show, there's 14 of them. Once you have one, mafia movie, you have 100 of them, and once, it's just a bandwagon kind of culture. I mean,
you're right.
The people that are original are original. The people that are unique, and, they're out there, cutting the path, and then, you got 500 people following in their footsteps, because it's just a lot easier, because the people who are forging the path are, cutting out the brush, and then you got a whole line of, conga line of 600 knuckleheads behind you doing the exact same thing, and,
it's really telling. One of the CDs that I just listened to, because it was a present for T's dad, was the new John Fogerty album. And on it, he revisits the songs that made him so popular. For how long has he been in music? Oh, my God. So one of the acts that he used was Dawes. And I'm not sure if you've ever seen Dawes, the group, but
I've heard of them.
Yeah, they're real refreshing. They were on Letterman a couple of weeks ago, and they're going to be at in Lancaster, PA, in the next week or so. But John Fogerty's got such a trained ear that he wants to get to the new, fresh sound. And when you combine what has been so breathtakingly popular, and then you put a new spin to it, oh my God, it sounds like a whole new song.
When you do something original and something fresh, I mean, it's tough to get it out there, because people are just used to the same old, same old, and that's the biggest problem, is how do you make yourself heard when you're singing a different tune? And that's what, and it happens in everything, it happens in movies, and it happens in music, it happens in television, it's, how many vampire, movies and books and TV shows do we need? You know, it's like one vampire hits big, and all of a sudden you got a million vampires. I mean,
that's right.
That's just the nature of this. You know, you would think that people who were in the creative business would come up with some creative stuff, like the way they did it, like in the '60s and the early '70s. I mean, the same guys that were doing, like, you know, the same guy that discovered Aretha was the same guy that discovered Dylan. You know what I mean?
Wow.
You know what I mean? I mean, there you go. You know what I mean? Like, okay. You know, John Hammond was, you know, was you know, it's like, okay, that's cool. He wasn't trying to find, you know, 65 Bob Dylans. He just wanted to find one. He just wanted to find one Aretha. And he just wanted to, you know, make the difference. And you know,
God
back
bless
in the 60s, I mean, yeah, but there was a lot of different stuff going on. I mean, Led Zeppelin was so different from Hendrix, you know. And
yes.
It was just a lot of really unusual stuff. In one decade, I mean, you think about the 60s, I mean.
Oh, my God.
You know,
well,
Beatles.
Look.
Yeah, you had the Beatles. You had Motown. Like, look at what's going on in Motown in the 60s. It was like, holy heck.
And even with the British invasion, you know what?
Jerry
and the Pacemakers sounded completely different from the Dave Clark Five. And, of course, they sounded different from the Rolling Stones. It was just really a creative time. Oof.
Yeah,
man.
A lot of good stuff. And, you know, it's getting back to that. You know, people are, you know, I know it in my bones. People are just tired of the same old, being the pedal, the same old stuff all the time. And something comes out that's fresh, and, you know, people are going to flock to it. It's that time now. And, you know, I think that the logjam has broken, and I think that a lot of creative stuff's going to come out in the next, you know, months and coming years. It's going to be cool television and cool movies and cool music, and it's going to get back to, you know, stuff like, you know, when The Sopranos first came out. It was just like,
oh,
what,
man,
heck,
wow, right, oh my God, God rest his soul, bless his heart, Tony. Whew,
yeah.
And you, speaking about something fresh and beautiful, hon, that's going to be July 20th at Ram's Head in Annapolis, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
RamsHeadTavern.com, that's where you get your tickets, or you can go to slimman.com and find out information and get the link there. Ding!
Yep. Yeah, you
know. I cannot miss the show. I have disappointed you a couple of times. I cannot miss the show.
Yes, you have.
I will be there. I know it. I know it.
Yes, you
I
have.
I've broken your heart,
beer,
and I know.
I don't know.
I am. And Griselda and Matt, say hello. And our guests in the chat room, they all say that they love you.
Well, you tell both of them I said hello.
I will. And I will see you on the 20th. And that's a
Trish,
promise.
I love talking to you. I really do. You know that.
And
I'm
I love talking to
you.
You.
It's a
you
lot of
are...
fun. Like, you know, a lot of times when people say, can you do an interview, you're going, wah. Whenever I hear you call and you say, hey, let's do an interview, I'm like, hey, I know it's going to go by really quick and we're going to talk some really cool stuff.
I know. And now, momentarily, I'm going to get the little whisper in my ear, 90 seconds from the British voice.
90 seconds left.
So, look, anything that people want to know about slimman.com, they go to the website, including some. And there she is, 90 seconds, wonderful recipes. So wear the dress on the 20th, and everything will be wonderful.
All right.
Okay?
Yeah, and you know what? If people want to get the recipes, they can go to slimmancooks.com.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's good. That's just the food stuff. So
okay.
I thought I'd talk that out there.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. 60 seconds. God bless you. I'll see you. Drive carefully coming up from Nashville.
All right, hon. Let's keep in touch.
I will. We will.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Love you.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Don't forget tonight, ghpradio.com. Kim Weston, our good friends at IAF, iTrackIAF.com. Just a big party and a half and a Christian DeMasones, happy birthday. He's going to be with company on the show on Tuesday. God bless you all. Thank you. Have a good weekend from Hyper Jazz.